The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is New York State Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes. A Democrat, Peoples-Stokes has served Buffalo's 141st Assembly District since 2003, and it's her first appearance on the Capital Connection. Welcome, Majority Leader Peoples-Stokes. It's a pleasure to have you here. Your reputation precedes you.
Well, thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here. I feel like I'm fitting right in with the history of the institution, people coming on this show.
Oh, yeah. We've had a lot of people. Right now, we're in favor with Andrew Cuomo. He didn't talk to us for about 8 years. But then all of a sudden, he showed up. And he's been on fairly constantly since that time. But you never know when it's over. How are you guys getting along with him?
Actually, I get along with him fine. I grew up between two brothers, one older and one younger, and sometimes we agreed and sometimes we disagreed. And at the end of the day, we are both still Democrats and have the best interests of the constituency of the state of New York at heart. So I get along fine.
Well, well said. But have you ever had to have a really, a fight with him?
Yes, I have.
Which time?
A couple of things we've had some disagreements on. And at the end of the day, sometimes he won, sometimes I did.
Yeah. And how is it to be the majority leader as opposed to the speaker? So you have a boss. I keep telling my children, don't have a boss. So what's that relationship like?
Well, actually, the more than just the speaker being my boss, I think I have 107 of them.
Very well put.
So I have to try to figure out how do you keep 107 people together? And that's a bit of a challenge, but we seem to be getting it done so far.
So what is your job? What does the majority leader actually do?
The majority leader actually manages the floor.
So you are there all the time when it's
Yes, I am there all the time. There's an office down the hall, but we're back and forth between the office and the floor. We try to make sure colleagues are available to take votes when it's time to take votes. I spend a lot of time on the phone with them, and we help the speaker during the conference when we have our private conferences.
So when I talk to speakers, they almost always tell me it's the conference that makes the decisions. But it was a guy named Robert Michels, a famous sociologist, who wrote something called The Iron Law of Oligarchy. When you have a lot of people, one person becomes the head person. Is that how it works?
And not in my estimation. I mean, even when Speaker Silver was there, he still had to listen to 104 people. And his staff, they basically did the same thing as Speaker Hastie's staff does. They take really good, copious notes around what every member has to say. And then they try to put that all together to craft something that we can come out with as one on.
Well, what if the speaker has a difference of opinion with his 104 people?
Well, then he has 107 ways he needs to figure out how to convince people to be where he is.
I'm thinking specifically of what's going on now on bail reform. Speaker is quite sure that it's right, what he's done is right. I agree with that. On the other hand, you may lose some voters around the state as a result of that, and that's letting poor people out who can't afford to put bail up and who may commit a crime.
Well, I think the speaker is right in this instance, and I think it was right of him not to do the politically expedient thing, is to jump right out and said, okay, poor people, black people, brown people, you have to go back to the days where it used to be. Judge wants to send you without being convicted. Judge can send you without being convicted. I think he's right to stand tall on that. I do think also it gives people who are the naysayers an opportunity to see that most of what they're saying is not really even true. Mm-hmm. It's just supposition.
This is about getting out and committing another crime.
And committing another crime, because if you have the money to get out, you can get out and commit another crime. What's the difference? There's not a lot of difference, except that some people are incarcerated before they're convicted of anything. And honestly, the Eighth Amendment doesn't call for that. So everybody should have the same rights here.
Speaking of which, we just saw, and I can't help asking you as you're on this week, that Harvey Weinstein was convicted of a couple of sexual crimes. What do you make?
The justice system
Yeah.
They say she's blind, but she smells money pretty good, and it's not fair yet.
This is seen as a great victory for the Me Too movement. You obviously have some feelings about some of the things that are happening in American society where women are concerned.
I do.
As a question.
You know, I think this is not the first instance where, you know, justice has prevailed. I mean, Bill Cosby went through the same issue. And so I do think that women should have their day in court, should not be violated. And I'm just kind of sad that it took so many decades for this to be resolved to a point where, you know, gentlemen, no matter what business they're in, will understand that you don't have this privilege any longer to abuse and use women at your will.
Do you think there's actually a change? I mean, we have sexual training, sexual predatory training here in terms of what's allowable and what's not allowable. And boy, everybody toes the line around here. I'm wondering whether this is just a sign of the times.
No, I think this is going to be a forever movement. I don't think the Me Too movement is ever going back in the closet at all. And so people need to understand that, male and female. And, you know, I feel really good about that because I think it's way overdue.
We are talking to Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peebles-Stokes, and she's a Democrat. She's from Buffalo. So it's often been said that Buffalo may be getting the short end of the stick in New York State politics with so much of the resources going to New York City. Is that true?
I would say that no one's ever going to feel like they get what they deserve. Everybody's always going to want what? More. But I do understand that we serve in a representative government. And if most of the people live in downstate, then they should have most of the representation. And because they do have most of the representation, clearly most of the dollars are going to follow where the representation goes. I understand that math, and so I'm not getting ready to get into anybody's debate about whether upstate should get more and New York City should get less. I do know that if it was not for the revenues that come out of New York City, there would not be revenues to go into invest in Buffalo. And so when we get access to those investment dollars in Buffalo, I'm excited about that and glad about it. I think the governor's Buffalo Billion has done a phenomenal job in helping to grow the economy in Buffalo and Western New York. I think the way he restructured Regional Economic Development Corporations has done a phenomenal job in growing our economy in Buffalo. In fact, when I was in Israel last week, I met a gentleman who won the 43 North competition, which is a business competition that was put forth under the Buffalo Billion. He won it in Buffalo, and now he's producing a product that's called Voice It. And soon, everyone will know about that product. That came out of an economic development initiative through the Buffalo Billion. And this guy is now in Israel talking about it. And he's setting up, you know, opportunities for manufacturing his product in Syracuse. So do I think that we could get more? I absolutely do. But do I think that we have some ability to say that New York City and downstate people should give more to upstate and get less for themselves? I'm not into that game because I understand representative government. And people represent their districts. Just happens to be more of them representing their districts than there is of me who represent Buffalo.
So, Majority Leader Crystal Peebles-Stokes, let me ask you a little bit about the Trusted Traveler Program. The governor is furious, and I've talked to him a number of times about this, with Donald Trump, and thinks he's being punitive towards New York State just because he can, and that's the way he is. What do you think?
I think the governor's right. I think Donald Trump is being punitive and so very unnecessary what he's doing. In order to get access to Nexus, you literally have to go through an interview. People have to see you face to face. And sometimes people are fingerprinted and you have to have a passport and all this information that's required. If you're concerned about an illegal immigrant getting access to that, it won't happen because they're not going to be eligible for it. So to make a punitive decision on New Yorkers who are eligible for Nexus and have access to it is just almost unfair. Not almost unfair. It is unfair. And I hope that soon we will have someone in the administration who will not govern in a punitive nature.
What do you think the chances of that happening are? Do you think that the Democrats can beat Trump?
I'm a fervent prayer, and I'm praying really hard that that can happen.
Well, the great thing about you as a majority leader is that you're trained to count votes. Do you see the votes happening?
I do see the votes happening. I haven't made any public announcement about who I think can pull all those votes together, but that's imminent for me, and at some point we'll be happy to share that with you.
Now, the blue states, California, New York, Massachusetts, where I live, so many other places are really under the gun.
Oh, you live in Massachusetts?
I do.
Oh.
And Governor Cuomo Sr. We had a weekly show for a lot of years, used to yell, yes, I know, you put your dark cloak on and you take the people's money. And then you go back to Massachusetts. So your point is well taken. But there have been proposals lately that New York be split, you know, New York City, maybe central New York, maybe Buffalo, the Buffalo Niagara area. Is this just plaything, or will this ever happen?
Well, I for one hope that it doesn't. I don't think the founding fathers of the state made a mistake with representative government. I think it's the right thing to do. And if people want to change things for that they think would be beneficial, I think would be a big mistake. I think the vast majority of the resources that finance things that are important to upstate New Yorkers comes as a result of the wealth that comes out of New York City. And if we take that away, I think we lose rather than gain. And so I think that when people are desperate for power, their first mode of operation is to separate and divide. I think that's a mistake. I think we should stay together as one state of New York, and we should begin working better together as citizens, no matter what party we come from.
Well, I certainly agree with you about that. Now, let's give you the due that you deserve, and that is legalizing marijuana.
Let's go.
Now, I live in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, which is the great recipient of Governor Cuomo's position on marijuana, legalizing marijuana. He says he wants it, but it's not happening. I know you were early into the legalization of marijuana. Why isn't it happening? He says now he wants to travel to several other states to make sure of what we're doing. Come on.
I don't know why it's not happening, but I want to commend you all in Massachusetts for making that decision. And I don't know if the governor has been over there already to Massachusetts, but he's gonna see a lot of New York State plates around your dispensaries.
No question.
I'm not sure what the delay is. I think there are a number of people who are in both the Senate and the Assembly who represent suburban districts who somehow feel that this is not a good idea for their young people and not a good idea for police to be able to know who to stop, when to stop. I think that they are mistaken, that this is a good idea and we should move forward with it. And hopefully the governor will be there before we finish the session. There's some who think that you can't get this done unless it's a part of the budget. I don't disagree with that. I think we can get it done either in the budget. I should say I don't agree with that. I think we
you
can get
it
done
with,
in the budget.
Yeah.
And I think we can get it done outside of the budget. I think New Yorkers, the voters, if you watch the polling numbers, none of them are saying that this is something that shouldn't happen. In fact, most people are saying that it should happen. And if we were a state that would allow the people to make decisions, we would already be legal. But we're not. We're a state that has to come through the legislature. And so I think it's time for the governor and the legislators to stop holding their own personal opinions and impacting the lives of people across the state of New York who would like to see this happen. I think it's going to happen this year, but I actually thought that last year, too. So I'm just going to keep working to make it happen.
And how about those arguments against it, you know, that there'll be automobile crashes? We haven't seen them that I know of in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, I'll tell you that much.
You haven't seen that?
You have not seen that.
My staff and I have been to Canada. They said the sky has not fallen there yet either.
And how do you test for drugs? You can test for liquor, but how do you test for marijuana?
Well, I think a part of what needs to happen with that is that, and we've done that in our legislation, is say a part of the resources that are garnered will be used specifically to come up with a way to test for roadside impaired driving. When this country made driving under the influence of alcohol an issue, there was not a breathalyzer in place. That came afterwards because of the research. And I think the same thing has to happen here. Problem is we can't even get access to the potential revenues because people won't vote for the opportunity to make it legal. The other thing I want to, you know, be real clear about is that if this is now, and some people say $51 billion industry underground, how many people are getting stopped already for impairment driving? What is that impact on our society right now? I would venture to say that the people don't have data on that because no one's been looking at it or collecting it. We don't even know that that's a problem. We're just suspecting that it could be a problem, so we want to say we shouldn't do it. That's not logic.
Well, on behalf of the people of Massachusetts, I want to just say thank you, as I always do, to the governor for supplying us with all this money, because the money is rolling in.
Well, we might have to find a way for you guys to share some of that New York revenue that's coming over there.
Well, the way to do that is to pass marijuana reform in New York State, that's for sure.
I'm trying, sir. I'm going to keep working.
I know you are. So the question of this session, what's the holdup? I mean, he wants it in the budget. You want it in the budget. Who doesn't want it in the budget?
Well, I think we both do want it in the budget, but some of us need some things that are clear in the statute, in the language. And one of those pieces of clarity, I think he is there on, and that is, you know, the opportunity to create equity in business, who gets access to the business. If there are people on the ground right now who can, in day one, become above ground in business, that I think we're good on. We're on the same page on. What we're not on the same page on is I need statutory language that says we're going to invest in the lives and the communities of the people who have been incarcerated under the war on drugs. And it's a lot of people. We're talking about decades of impact on the lives of children who have been through families that have where their parents or either grandparents have been incarcerated with small levels of marijuana. All of that is not going to take one budget or two budgets to repair. It took decades to create the problem. The communities all look alike. They look the same way in Utica as they do in Brooklyn. They look the same way in Brooklyn as they do in Buffalo or Rochester. And so I think that there has to be an intentional desire to fix the lives of multiple generations of black and brown people who have been destroyed as a result of the war on this particular drug that we now want to make revenue on.
Okay, just for clarification, how do you take those people who've been in the subterranean, so to speak, area, they're selling marijuana and they're making whatever living they are, and now there's a sense, at least I think I'm hearing that from you, that those people should be basically brought up to the top, to the earth, and allowed to make a living here? How
well, first of all, you don't say that you can't get a license if you have a convicted felon, you're a convicted felon, if you don't say that. You say that the license don't have to be all together. You don't have to get three licenses at one that cost you multiple millions of dollars. You don't have to say that. You can say that there's going to be 10 licenses available and some permitting along the way that will allow people to be in business. And it opens the door for everybody who wants to be there. Just because people are underground now doesn't mean they want to come above ground. But that does mean that we should provide that opportunity. And we have done that by the way the licensing structure is created.
Some will say what you're trying to do is to permit people who have been breaking the law all along now to be making profit. Is that wrong?
Well, let's go, because quite honestly, let's the people who have been making the $51 billion, they just didn't happen to go to jail, but they've been breaking the law.
Right.
Right?
I hear you. Yeah. I'm with you. I just want to ask the question. Okay. So, look, many SUNY schools are facing budget holes because of the so-called TAP gap, including SUNY Buffalo, where you come down on a millionaire's tax. UUP has called for taxing the ultra-rich. And members are rallying for more SUNY support in the budget this week.
For more SUNY support?
Yes.
Well, let's just be honest. We're not going to create the communities of the future, the workforce of the future, the business of the future, if we don't invest in higher ed. And so I think we have to invest in higher ed. Actually, I think we have to invest in K-12 as well. We need a lot of work there, too. But higher ed, quite honestly, is where you create your next economy at. It's where the new business entrepreneurs come from. It's where the new app developers come from, the new scientific researchers come from. And so I think we have to invest in that.
As someone who taught for 40 years at SUNY, I do want to thank you for that support. So the question I have is, where will that money come from? You've got a governor who has a $6 billion budget deficit.
That's debatable.
Oh, that is debatable, huh? You think he's got more and he's not showing his full hand?
Could be.
That's very evasive. So where's the difference between what people in the Assembly are thinking and people in the Senate? The Senate, we are told, is more conservative than the Assembly is. You've seen that for yourself. They got a whole bunch of people elected in basically Republican districts. They're loath to give it up. They're worried about a number of things. How do the two houses get to reconcile?
I think they will, because both of our leaders have a very good relationship. You know, I understand that they both have conservative memberships in their conference. The Speaker has a lot of conservatives as well.
Yeah, but and he's got a lot of Democrats in the House.
Yeah, well,
house.
You know, you sometimes need more than just a vote of all the people who think like you. You need the votes of the people who don't think like you as well, because you never know when you're going to need to have everybody on the same page. And so I think that they're going to work through it. And at the end of the day, we're going to come up with a budget and with a sound legislative strategy that, you know, ends the 243rd legislative session in a really positive way for the people of the state of New York.
So let me see if I get this straight. You're not sure that there really is a $6 billion budget deficit, number one.
I actually have never been really sure of that. I'm waiting for some comments from some of our budget people to get clarity on it, but I really think it's more like four, personally.
Four is a lot.
It is a lot, but we're in a state where we also have the capacity to raise a lot, too. There's more billionaires who live in the state of New York than...
Okay, well, what about tax the rich? Tax the billionaires, and they move to Florida. There's a question there somewhere.
Not all of them. I mean, there's a reason why people desire to be in New York City, and that desire hasn't changed. In fact, that number is actually growing.
So you believe in taxing people who make $1 billion a year more than they're paying now?
I do. Again, I just left Israel, and those folks over there pay 50% of their income in taxes, but look what they get for it. Nobody's leaving.
So you've been very closely associated with the methodology or the people who want to bring minority women-owned businesses to have a fair chance.
Well, I think so far New York does a great job with that. I think the priority is to, you know, have anybody that's doing business with the state understand that you have to do business with people of color and women. If we had left it just to the people who have access to procurement, they would just keep dealing with their friends like they always have. That's not helpful to communities around and economies around the state. And so I think it's MWBE is critical. I think the governor has done a great job with that by increasing the goals. They're all just goals. There's no real requirements that they have to happen, but it's going well. The number of minority businesses that have been created in my district alone, of people who are successfully in business now, is quite impressive.
But you're calling for women to run these
companies. Women and minorities, absolutely. Women tend to, you know, hire other women. Women tend to be homeowners and raising families on their own in some cases. And so I don't think that people should always necessarily aspire to be successful and get a job. I think people should aspire to be successful and create jobs, create your own job. And so I think that supporting MWBEs is a critical step in that direction, and it's proven to be pretty correct.
You are the second most powerful person in this New York State Assembly. So let me ask you this. You know, when you dream at night, do you ever dream about higher office?
No, not at all. Not at night, not during the day, not at all. It's not even in my orbit. But let me just say this. Being a majority leader was never in my orbit either.
How did it happen?
It just happened. I mean, I'm not the majority leader because I'm the first African-American woman. Not because I'm a woman. It's not because I'm African-American. It's because I brought the best skill set to do the job. That is the capacity to build relationships with people, no matter where they come from, to be able to communicate with them, to work on consensus. Those are the things that I'm good at. So that's how it happened. I'm black or not because I'm a woman.
So if Andrew Cuomo came up to you and said to you, Crystal Peoples-Stokes, majority leader, I'd like you to run as my running mate for lieutenant governor, you would say?
I would say no, because I think you have really the greatest lieutenant governor that we could already have now. That's
Hochul.
Kathy Hochul. Yeah. She's really good.
Yeah. Okay. So you would say no to that?
I would say no to that.
Okay, so the feds have recently said, in fact, very recently, as part of Trump's anti-New York campaign, I think, to an $8 billion health care grant, which the governor is decrying. And what do you say?
I say I'm not sure if I understand what's wrong with this man.
With
Trump, why is he so punitive? What is it that about New York that bothers you? You've moved. Okay. That's fine. Take your family with you, but government is not supposed to be your opportunity to get revenge against people for things they've said, done, or things that you don't like. I think that's clear over his entire term that he doesn't understand the purpose of government. He thinks that it's all about him, and it's not. It's about all of us. And him hurting people that he doesn't even know because he's mad at someone else. It's like a bully in the playground, and it's shameful.
It sure is. It sure is shameful. And we may have him for another 4 years.
I hope you're wrong about that.
I said may.
I don't think we'll have him for another 4 years. No way.
We're out of time. Our guest has been the very impressive New York State Assembly Majority Leader, Crystal Peoples Stokes. She's a majority leader of the New York State Assembly. That's number two. And thanks so much for joining us. You were terrific.
It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure to be here. I've never been to this facility before. It's really nice, and it's an honor to be here. And it's an honor to meet you, too, sir.
And we'll hope you'll come back again. We'd love to have you.
I'll be happy to.
Okay.